Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 11 of Scholarly Peers podcast. I'm your host, Sinwon Chong from the University of Edinburgh. And today with us is Dr. Jit Soon Jung from the University of Hong Kong. And I'm very excited to have Jit Soon here with us to kick off our second phase of the podcast series, which focuses on senior academics or journal editors' perspectives on journal peer review. As some of you may remember, in our first 10 episodes, we talked to 10 different early career researchers about their perspectives. And I think it's quite interesting to look at what more experienced academics have to say about journal peer review as a process. So Jason, thank you very much for accepting my invitation.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so Jason, do you mind introducing yourself briefly, and in particular, maybe your experience in journal peer review?
Well, sure. Hello, everyone. I'm Jason Zhang. I'm an assistant professor at the University of Hong Kong. My research area is higher education. I publish articles in higher education journals, general education journals, and sometimes interdisciplinary journals. Well, I have experience in the journal peer review process as an author, as a reviewer, and as an editor. Before I joined this conversation, I actually checked my research profile in publications and reviews to just refresh my memories. So first, as an author, I started to publish in international journals in 2011. Since then, as like many other academics, I have continued to publish my research in different journals. I submit my manuscript and receive the decision, sometimes success, sometimes reject, and most of the times revision. I get happy, I get disappointed, and I struggle and learn. This is part of the job, I would say. As a reviewer, I also have experience of 9 to 10 years. When I published a couple of papers in international journals, I started receiving review invitations from different journals, mostly about similar topics that I publish. I remember that I was very excited to receive the review invitation for the first time. I felt that editors recognize my work and see me as a peer in the field. Now I receive review invitations from all different journals almost every week, sometimes 2 to 3 invitations on the same day, some extreme days. Unfortunately, I have to decline most of them and focus on my specific fields now. I review an average of 30 to 40 papers per year, which is quite a lot, but I feel this is the obligation as an academic. Finally, as an editor, I have been a co-editor of one of the highly recognized journals in the field of higher education since 2019. My journal receives more than 1,000 manuscripts per year, and we have 6 co-editors and 40 associate editors, a very large editorial team. I handle around 100 manuscripts per year. I am also part of the editorial board member in 2 other international journals, so I have the privilege to see the practices of different journals.
Thank you so much. I think, Jason, obviously you have a lot of experience in journal peer review in different capacities. So I'm really looking forward to our conversation, so that you can share your experiences with our audience. Let's start with your experience as an author. So I wonder if you have any unforgettable peer review experiences as an author, and I'll leave it to you how to interpret the word unforgettable.
Sure.
So I just leave it a little bit open-ended.
Well, thank you for the question. Yes, many experiences, some positive and some negative, and a lot of memories in that process. Each paper I published had an interesting review history, and I remember many stories. Well, my first manuscript to the top tier journal was rejected, and I felt frustrated, and I think I got a bit scared. So I sent the same paper to the lower tier journal, extremely low tier journal, not even indexed ones, and that the paper was just immediately accepted. And I reflect on myself now, it was clear that I did not have a broader view in choosing the right journal at my level and my scholarly level, where I should have asked for some advice from senior colleagues at the time, which I didn't do it. But this experience made me to reflect how to choose the journal in terms of scholarly interest, research topic, and also my scholarly levels. Of course, there were some positive experiences. I would say that a positive review is not necessarily a good or helpful review. I mean, it's not directly related with the accept and positive good review. What do I mean by that? Sometimes you receive the comments like, almost everything was great. You can publish your paper as it is, but it's not necessarily it's a good or a positive review. Because there are not many things to learn from this kind of review. Good review is more critical and constructive ones. In my earlier years of submissions, sometimes the reviews gave very detailed comment how to revise the paper and make it more conceptually and apply more rigorous methodology. And the review process was so tough, but when the paper was published, it was another level of the paper compared to the first manuscript. And then it became one of my most cited papers. So that's kind of more positive experience. Of course, there were some unpleasant experiences. I sometimes got still some harsh reviews, like the author does not know what she's doing. The paper does not provide anything new, or the paper did not include the key references. Clearly, it was the reviewer's paper. I don't take those comments too personally or emotionally, but I still get disappointed, of course, when I feel that the reviewers, yes, and then sometimes it's clear that reviewers did not read my paper carefully. Some things are already in the manuscript, but the reviewer says I did not include such information. So that's a kind of unforgettable experience, I would say.
Right. That's. I think what I find interesting and important to reflect on is, you know, when we think about positive review experience, it doesn't mean it's an easy process. Sometimes we don't learn a lot, as you said, and our paper, you know, even though it's published, it may not be the best version of it.
Absolutely.
Rather, positive peer review experience is one that challenges our
exactly.
thinking.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a very important point. And I want to go back to something you mentioned at the beginning of your response. So you shared your experience when you started your career. You submitted the manuscript to a high-ranking journal. It was rejected at the end, and then you submitted it to a lower-ranking one. You got accepted. I wonder. I think for doctoral students, early career researchers, one of the questions that they face is how to choose an appropriate journal. And I've heard so many different things, so many different approaches. Some of them talked about, you know, starting at the top of the letter and work your way down. So if the top one rejects, you go to the second one, and then, you know, you go down. Or some people would say, look at the scope, look at the aims, and, you know. I wonder what's your take on this?
Well, that's really important and good question. I don't say the journal rankings or impact factor is the only criteria that you choose. I think it's more important to know the journal's preference, the journal's style. There are journals who will welcome your paper in terms of topic, methodology, and then discourse that they have. Even if it's a lower tier journal, if they don't like your kind of topic, your kind of discourse, you will get fair. Even if it's a top tier journal, if you are using the same discourse that most authors in that journal are using, mm-hmm. you might have a better chances. So I think most important thing is knowing the journal. How do you know the journal? When you read a lot of papers from that journal, you will have better ideas what kind of papers they publish. that's one advice that I wanted to give. And other advice is asking someone. If you have a co-author who is more experienced or more senior than you are, obviously you can ask advice. Even if it's a single author paper, I'm sure you have your academic advisors, and ask some advisors, because the whole things are from experience. I believe your advisors might have better ideas how to choose the right journal for you. So that would be my second advice.
Yeah, I think that's very important to think about, because I mean, when we publish with the journal, it's not just a product. You're telling people, I belong to this community, I engage with the literature in this community. And
exactly.
I remember you soon, you mentioned the word discourse quite a few times, and I think in the talk that you gave for Bira,
mm-hmm.
Previously you also talked about this when you shared. I wonder if you can say a little bit more about what you mean by we have to look at whether we're part of the discourse. Can you say something?
What?
Because I think the example you gave last time, it's about language education submissions to higher education research and development. And you mentioned one of the reasons that those manuscripts got rejected, it's because they were citing maybe, you know, literature from second language acquisition or language education, but not really higher education literature. So can you say something more about what you mean by discourse?
Sure. So a lot of disciplines, actually in the field of education, we have kind of overlap areas in education study. For example, language education and higher education, especially in my field like higher education, we are quite interdisciplinary field. That's why we have people from psychology, we have people from teacher education, language education, even health profession. We have those kind of overlapping areas. Obviously, some implications are there for higher education research as well. But the problem is, if your old literature and key concepts heavily rely on that specific field, like psychology, health profession, linguistic, then it doesn't provide wider or broader implications to the general higher education readership. For example, the journal audience of my journal in higher education, we are more focusing on general issues in higher education, how we see the students, how we see the academics, how we see the teaching and learning in university context. We are not particularly focusing on specific concepts or terms in psychology or language education. So if you focus and heavily use that very specific concept in your sub-field, it doesn't fit to the audience or readers of more general types of journal. So one easiest way is to check your references. What references are you using? You using references from linguistic field? Are your old references from psychology? In those cases, I would say you better focus on psychology field or language education rather than coming to the higher education. But as soon as you frame the research as more general higher education issues, like student issues, teacher issues, then you might have better chances to work with the higher education journals.
Yeah, I think that's very good advice, and I think sometimes even with the same concept there are different interpretations and
exactly.
understanding the concept.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we have to really look at the relevant literature, and I think your advice on looking at the reference list as the first step to look at what researchers in the field has to say about the topic is quite important.
Yes, and in education about same phenomena, they use different terms, even terminologies
yeah.
are quite different.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that's very, very helpful. Let us turn to your identities as a peer reviewer and a journal editor. And the same question, any unforgettable experience? Because as you said, you handle so many manuscripts every year. So I wonder if you if any of those experiences, you know, kind of stick with you
mm-hmm.
that you can share with us.
Yeah, yes. Once I received the exact same manuscript from two different journals at almost the same time in the same week.
Okay.
Yeah, the authors are not supposed to submit the same manuscript to the different journals. And they have to declare, actually, in the online system, they have to declare that they did not submit this manuscript in another journal. So this practice is completely unethical. Well, from the author's point of view, maybe it was unfortunate because the same manuscript came to me. Both journal editors contacted me to review the same paper because it was in my research area. And I detected the case and reported it to both journal editors, and they withdrew the paper from both sides. So that was one of the unforgettable experiences. Well, I also feel a bit frustrated when the author did not follow the comment properly in the revision process. Some authors do not take the comments seriously and make only minor kind of changes. Sometimes reviewers use the expression like cosmetic changes. So you pretend like you revised something, but not dealing with most critical or serious comment. And just resubmit the paper, hoping that the reviewers will accept this revised version because I did something. But of course, I have more positive and very rewarding experiences on the reviews. Sometimes you observe the paper's improvement during the whole process. In the first version, the paper had not really good standard quality, but they take all the comments very seriously, and then they even extend their ideas, and then the paper makes significant improvement during the whole process. That is a very rewarding experience. As an editor, I also had one interesting experience. Once the authors, they didn't agree with the reviewer's comment. And the author actually asked me to talk over the Skype. And then I didn't accept because it's not a usual practice. But sometimes the authors, they wanted to push their agenda very strong way. So that was the kind of interesting experience that I had.
I wonder how that was resolved eventually, because I think sometimes people have very strong opinion about their piece, and I think that's fair because they believe in the work that they published.
Mm-hmm.
But as you know, from an editor's perspective, because you have to kind of reconcile with different parties, so there are the reviewer's comments there you have to consider, but also the author's perspective as well. I wonder, so it's how you communicate that with the author is very important.
I told the authors in that particular case, I told the authors I respect your argument in your paper, and it's completely up to the authors. You can argue with the reviewers for sure, because you know your paper very well. And I told authors, if you have something if you have something you don't agree with the reviewers, that's perfectly fine. Write down all your argument there, and then your argument, your justification will be delivered to the reviewer, and the reviewer will see your argument and decide if it makes sense or not. And then I ask the reviewers the same thing. This is the author's position, so please consider author's position and see if this justification makes sense or not. And that process sometimes goes, extreme cases like third round, fourth round of revision, back and forth. The editors, sometimes you have to make judgment or take side of one side, either author or reviewer, but I wouldn't say it's a taking side, it's just a moderation process. Yeah. And then we see both position, and then we decide what extent of revision is necessary in this case.
Yeah, I think that's very helpful as well, because I think that's part of the review process that people don't see, and you don't read about it on the journal's website, but sometimes it happens. So let's turn to the next part of our interview, which I would like to ask questions about your developmental process as a stakeholder in the peer review process. Obviously, you have a lot of experience now, but I wonder, when you first started how did you learn to navigate the peer review process? For example, when you were a doctoral student or maybe a postdoctoral fellow, what did you do to make sure you know everything before you know to do the right thing? I mean,
well, it's very important question. I think the first number one is we learn from the experience. So that's the first answer. The more you practice and try, the more successful experience you will have. Of course, in the earlier stage, everybody has the same difficulties, similar difficulties and challenges. But with experience, you gain experience, you gain better knowledge how to write and how to handle the review and how to be more strategic in choosing journals and dealing with the review process. My suggestion and my way was I tried to read a lot, and then I think that's the most important thing. We have to read a lot. We actually need really in-depth knowledge on that particular topic that we are writing. We should be the one who knows the topic and the contents the best. Neither the reviewer nor the editor. You are the person who knows this topic the best. When you have enough knowledge on the topic, you should know how to respond to the reviewer's comment. But you don't need to follow every comment the reviewer suggested, like I mentioned earlier, but you can only judge which comment is that you should follow when you have a clear idea about what you are talking about. If you don't have enough knowledge on that topic, you might lose the direction of the revision process based on different comments given to you. So I'm not saying that you can ignore the comment. Most cases, the reviewers are the expert on the similar topic, and all of them try to help you there to revise and improve the paper. Of course, you should consider each comment seriously, but you have to be able to see whether reviewers' comments are really in the scope that you are focusing on, and whether you really have full understanding about your topic and methodology. From my experience, I think it comes with experience again. In the earlier stage of career, my focus was publishing. You have data, you studied a lot of the literature, you can write something. So the goal was having publication, submitting the paper, and having one more paper. That was the goal. But I look back myself, and as of today, my goal is not to publish. My goal is to do research and disseminate my research. I think that makes very differences, because a lot of early career researchers and early career academics, not that long ago of myself, we have all this pressure and also necessity of publication, and then everything is just to write one more paper. Let's see what I can write, and let's see how I can publish. But that's not the eventual goal. You have to like the topic. You really have to believe this topic is such an important thing in your field. And then what's the really something that you can contribute to your field? So central focus, central aim is doing research, not publishing.
I think that's a difference I don't think a lot of people recognize or appreciate, because I think there is pressure to publish and naturally to continue in the job that people like to do, and also to be able to disseminate research, they have to publish, So I think, but that's a very interesting perspective. I wonder if I can ask you a follow-up question about the more tacit aspect of peer review. You mentioned with experience, you get better and better at something. And I think that's the case for most doctoral students. For example, during their PhD, they have training on all sorts of things, but quite surprisingly, I think not on journal peer review. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I know universities usually have like one-off workshops or seminars on peer review, but not that systematic, and it's quite superficial because it's one-off, so it may be an overview of the different stages, different editorial outcomes. But as to, for example, the topics we talked about, like how to select a journal, how to deal with rejections, you know, what to do with reviewers' comments, all these things are not touched on. So I wonder, I've talked to different guests about what may be the better approach to develop this kind of capacity. Is it really the hands-on experience, or there should be something more structured, or maybe a combination of both?
I think sharing is important, even if it's not really a systematic way, because not many universities, even not many faculties, do not provide such a support. First of all, not everybody is writing. I have an interesting talk with my colleagues. Some doctoral programs, nobody is really interested in kind of writing or publishing. So it depends on the program. It depends on the faculty and university. So I don't think we can expect my university will provide such support. I think that's very kind of difficult expectation to achieve, but you can always find your peers and you can always share your experience in your research group. It doesn't need to be your university people. I think that you can find someone who is working with very similar research topic and then having similar experiences. You can make similar group and then you share case by case. And then if that sharing is, people share the experience and then you learn from each other, that kind of a group effort might be useful to help these young and early career researchers.
I wonder if you can share with us your first ever experience with journal peer review. Was it during your doctoral study or it's after?
Oh yeah, that's a very interesting question because it also this pressure for publishing is very recent phenomenon. So when I was doing PhD, we had no idea you should publish something. I did my PhD in my country. I didn't do my PhD in English. I did my PhD in Korean, which is my mother tongue. And then you go to those countries, you have those national journals, like written in Chinese, Japanese, Korean. So in my case, it was Korean journals. So I had a couple of publications written in Korean with my language during the PhD program. But then I moved to the overseas university for my postdoc. So I graduated my PhD only with the national language journal papers, not having any English written journal articles. And obviously I started my postdoc and then I realized, oh, this publication is necessary in English. And I started writing and submitting. Of course, I knew how to do research. I knew how to write the paper, but I had to adjust myself to completely different kind of practice because international journals operate in a very different way than your national community or national language journals operate. So yes, my first publication was when I was doing postdoc. And then since then, you know, I continued, yeah.
I think that's also something quite intriguing. I mean, publishing with regional journals or national journals, I think they have, of course, very different audience, very different readership. But sometimes, would you say that it's also a valuable outlet for early career researchers to consider, especially if, I don't know, if they're doing a topic that is very, very context specific, or I wonder whether that would be a good first step for some of the researchers out there.
Of course, I'm talking about mostly Asian young researchers in this case, because we have very similar challenges from mainland China, Japan, especially Japan, and Korea, Taiwan. Those countries, these doctoral students actually have these dual challenges. Because on one hand, they have to participate in national academic community, and they also have to publish something in their language. For them, it's something must do, because it's also important to be a community member in your national academic community. But at the same time, they also know these days, especially research universities, all of them, they expect these young researchers to publish something in English. So they have to divide their effort, time, energy of doing research in both languages, which is very challenging. I understand. I was in the same position as they were. If you ask if it's important, yes, it seems very important, especially if you are considering to develop your academic career in Japan, Korea, Taiwan, in China, those places, you really can't ignore that part. But at the same time, if you ask, should I still publish internationally? Yes, that's also absolutely yes. And then what's the benefit that I publish in English? I tell them, imagine the number of audiences that you can reach out. When you publish in national languages, of course, you can make a great contribution to your national academic community. But at the same time, internationally, imagine you write something and people from Latin America, people from Africa, they are all reading your article about your research. You can reach out, you can make communication with a much larger, broader community in your field. So it's hard, but it's important to consider both community, and making a balance would be something strategy, things that you have to develop.
I think that reminds me that, you know, the peer review process is a series of decision making, really.
Exactly.
At different stages, you have to, I don't think there is the right decision to make, but I think there is a suitable decision, suitable for your specific stage of career, suitable for that specific piece of research. I think that's very useful as well. I also think what you said connects with what you mentioned earlier about this course, because if you publish in national journals, you're participating in a community that uses a particular discourse or employs a particular discourse narrative, which may be quite different from like an international academic community. So I would, Jisun, if I may, I would like to round off our conversation by this question. I wonder what advice you will give to early career researchers or doctoral students who are going to submit their first ever manuscript. Mm-hmm. Do they have muster enough courage now to say, yes, I would like to give it a try? What's your advice to them?
Strategically, choose the right journal. That's the first advice. In your field, in your topic, review several journals and choose the best journal, the most fit journal for your research. That's the kind of strategic advice. Emotional advice. Don't be afraid of a failure. This is all about learning experience. So take it positively. You will receive the comment, sometimes with the rejection, but don't take those comments personally or emotionally. Don't react them as a kind of offensive way. It's not because your research is not good enough. It's not because you don't have quality as a researcher. That's not the meaning. So take all the comments as constructive and positive way, and take them as a learning opportunity. If it's necessary, you don't need to start revision right after receiving the decision letter. What I do, sometimes I just take a look, comment, and then get disappointed, upset, and then I just leave my manuscript and comment for a couple of days. And I pick up the paper again in the following weeks with more like calm, and then all the comments make more sense, and I can see how I can make the paper better. So I think that would be kind of emotional advice, attitude-wise.
Yeah, thank you very much. I think it's all about resilience. It's all about playing the long game, because if you want to be in academia, it's the norm. It's, you know, like everyday activity. Thank you so much, Jisun, for your advice and your time. And I think I'm very happy that you're able to share with us your tips. And so thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And I'll see everybody in